Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com, a special 11 a.m. edition. Why? Minicamp practice, day number two, gets going in about a half an hour. So Paul and I record the last 15 minutes of the show. You'll hear that. We kind of broke down what happened yesterday. We'll talk about today as well. Mm-hmm. But until then, we're going to take your calls at 201-939-4513. And, Paul, let's kick off the show with something that we can kind of move forward with NFL Network. They've been doing their top 100 players, and a Giant got ranked between 20 and 30.
Yeah, for the next ranking, and, you know, they've been going backwards from 100, going down at 10 player clips per se. Mm-hmm. And they are now in the 20s, and Landon Collins, who was one of the finalists for the NFL Defensive Player of the Year last season, is ranked the number 28 player in the NFL going into the 2017 season. Now, he's right ahead of Earl Thomas of the Seahawks, who's at number 30.
Remember, this is voted on by the players, folks.
Yeah, you know what's funny? For you guys who don't understand how this works, I want to say it was help me out here, John, November or December when the ballots came out?
I don't remember.
Okay. And the reason I know this is because the players would take the ballots. Some of them did them in the locker room. Others would take them into the lunchroom. And while they're having lunch, they'd sit there with their paper ballots. This isn't done by computer, by the way. It's not very high tech. And the NFL Network sends out these ballots, and they're just regular, you know, long-form, regular pieces of paper, and it just has all the blank lines on it, and the players just sit there, and they discuss it, and they fill it out. Well, that I want to say late November, might be early December. And the thing is, they're asked to project who are your top 100 players for the following season. So it's not based on what the guy did
right in
2016. It's what the players themselves project for the 2017 season. So keep in mind those parameters. And I don't know how seriously a lot of these folks take it. So for us, it's just kind of talk fodder. But Landon Collins, at the moment, is the highest-rated Giant.
Well, and I think based on his play last year, I think it makes sense. Hey, Dave, is it true there were two other Giants besides Collins in the top 100? Snacks and 96, and Jenkins was in the 50s, I think, right?
Yeah.
So I think that makes sense given how well those guys played last year. I got no argument with
Odell's
got
to be coming.
Yes. I would imagine Odell is firmly set in the top 20. Remember, you're going to have a lot of quarterbacks in that top 10. So
yeah.
That's probably going to be at least half of the top 10 quarterbacks, I would imagine. So I think Odell will crack the top 10, but I think it'll be close. You know, I think you'll have a couple running backs in there, a couple wide receivers in there. I got to imagine he's going to be the first or second wide receiver as voted by the players. I would think.
Well, you know, I think everybody pretty much agrees there are three elite guys who are among the best, and that would be Antonio Brown, Julio Jones, and Odell Beckham. And put them whatever order you want. I think those are your three, no?
I think you can argue A.J. Green's in that mix. He's really good.
I think he's the top of the next group for me. I don't think he's in the top three.
I think he's very close.
He's very close.
Very close.
I agree.
Because I would put him ahead of – I think A.J. Green is –
I think he's number four for me.
On a different tier than, say, like a Mike Evans.
I agree with that. I think you know.
So who?
But I think he's four. I think A.J. Green is four is what I think.
Who's in the tier with A.J. Green? Can't be in a tier by himself. You got to put him somewhere.
Wow.
See, I would put A.J. Green a tier above Dez, too. I would put Dez with Mike Evans in tier three.
Well,
or tier two.
Now, yes. Not a few years ago.
Well, but I also want to see how Dez does now after being healthy off the foot for another year.
Yeah.
That's why I think AJ's in the top four.
You want to separate the four from the pack instead of three? I guess I can't fight you on that one.
It's close, though.
He's close enough for me where I couldn't fight you. But I'm not putting anybody else in that pot.
Would I put anybody else in that pot?
I can't.
No.
You know, DeShaun Jackson's not there anymore.
Oh, no, absolutely not.
You know, he's not.
He was never there, in my opinion.
Fitzgerald is not there anymore.
No one on the Packers is there.
You know?
No one on New England is there. Amari Cooper's not there yet.
No?
No.
No.
No, you're right. Yeah, I wouldn't put anybody else in that group either. So, yeah, I think those would be my top four.
Patriot fans would probably try to put Edelman up in there, but he's not.
He's not even the number one receiver on this team anymore. Brandon Cook's there. Anyway, I thought that was just food for thought.
Yeah.
I think this list is so pointless and useless and doesn't really matter. I haven't really looked at it yet, to be quite honest with you.
You know what surprises me, though?
By the way, Tyreek Hill number 36. Everybody relax. 36?
That's why I'm trying to tell you.
He's been good for 5 minutes.
These things are talk fodder is what they are. But here's the thing that surprises me.
Devontae Freeman shouldn't be 41 either, by the way.
We both know how good Olivier Vernon is, and he didn't make the top 100.
Yeah. It's because he doesn't have the numbers. It's just a popularity contest.
Well, there you go. But, you know, for me, excuse me, I definitely think that Vernon is in the top 100, and I think you could easily make an argument that JPP might be in the top 100.
Yeah, I mean, it all depends on who you want to drop off then. I mean,
it's
such a very difficult list to kind of put together. But if you ask me, for example, would I rather have Thomas Davis or Olivier Vernon? I'd rather have Olivier Vernon. It's frankly not even close.
Well, I mean, look at this. Who's 100? Joey Bosa. Bosa over the course of the next 10 years, maybe.
Right.
But right now, today,
Bosa had more sacks than Vernon lead last year. And he probably had more pressures. Combined, everything put together.
I
remember he missed four games too, but I think you're picking the wrong guy because Bosa had a really good rookie year.
He did, and over the course of his career, he may turn out to be better. But
Adrian Peterson's 98, didn't play last year.
Yeah, that's pretty funny.
I mean, come on now.
All right, here we go. Brandy Graham is 93.
I think Brandon Graham.
He's not better than Olivier Vernon.
No, I would no.
He's not,
and neither is the Everson Griffin. By the way,
Everson Griffin's 92.
Correct.
No, they're not. They're not as complete players as Olivier Vernon is.
I agree with that.
And so
that's why I don't.
It is what it is.
I don't take these lists that seriously. I was trying to see who has not been named yet. I don't see either. Just in terms of division guys, I don't see either Ezekiel Elliott or Dak Prescott yet on the list. From what I'm doing a quick jog.
No,
through
I do not.
Here. Dez was on the list. He was in the 30s or 40s, I think. No, I think maybe he was in the 50s in terms of where he was ranked. So we'll see. It's always interesting. Anyway, let's get to the calls at 201-939-4513. Bash is in Ohio. He lead us off. Bash, what's going on?
How are you doing, John? What's going on, Paul?
Hi.
I just want to say real quick about the minicamp yesterday as far as first at minicamp. OBJ was in the building.
Yes,
Everybody
he was.
Talked about it. He was in the building.
And we all expected it. It's called mandatory minicamp for a reason.
Exactly. And I just want to say a little note on, I was listening to the press conferences, and Ben McAdoo, I love this guy. His interviews with the press is so, like, he gets straight to it, like, he don't get on anything. Like, they kept asking him about the whole thing. He just said, he's here, he's conditioned. He's here, like, and they keep asking him.
Bash, I have a question. As a fan, though, once you get into the regular season, you want to know something about a game or an opponent, don't you want the coach to give you an answer, to give you information as a fan?
Yeah, a little bit, but as far as me, how the questions they ask repeated questions as far as stuff that's not necessary. That as a fan, a certain question, yes, I would like to know the answer, but certain things, I mean, it's for the team to know, and for, like they was asking about OBJ as far as the OBJ questions I was talking about as far as reference to those questions I was talking about. As far as the team and stuff, yes, I would like to know. But as far as reference to OBJ, he was straight on it. He was straight on him.
Okay.
But I wanted to get into it. I had one question. I just wanted to say about OBJ and Ben. But where do y'all see – I was looking at minicamps, OT. Where did y'all see DRC as far as his role in this team this year? I know last year with the drafting of Eli Apple, which I didn't personally agree with, as far as having – DRC had a great season. Yes, I know Paul speaks about it a lot of time. Where do y'all see him at this year, as far as him and Eli did a lot of switching last year, as far as the outside position across from Jenkins and everything? Is he primarily going to be in the slot this year? Is he practicing? Do you see him in the minicamps?
Why would you change?
He's in the slot?
Where
is he at?
If all three guys are healthy and on the field, DRC will be in the slot. If Eli Apple is not healthy and not on the field, you know, he hasn't practiced in a bit because of illness and any bit of an injury,
right,
too.
Right, he had injury.
So
right.
Then I think you might see DRC outside. But if all three guys are out there, Jenkins, Apple, and DRC, he's going to be in the slot. And as Paul just said, why not?
Bash, right, that threesome is as good as any threesome in the league.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, I know he made that transition to the slot. How is he looking in the slot? Because I know he was an outside guy. He had to make that transition from
Bash, outside.
So I was thinking, how is he looking in the slot?
Bash, last year he was second team all NFL playing slot. I mean, he's made the transition. He's great.
And the funny thing is, like, body type, the long and lanky type usually doesn't go into
he's
the slot.
He's amazing.
But he is such an
athlete,
upper-tier athlete, that he's able to do it and do it really well. And I think his length really helps in that spot, too.
Okay.
There's no reason to move him outside unless there's an injury. John is 100% correct. Although I will tell you, you bring up an area for me that is still a concern. Who is the fourth corner? I just don't know who the fourth corner is on this team right now. I hope he's out there on the field, he may not be.
I mean, I'm thinking because of his experience, it's probably Valentino Blake right now, but
because of his resume, he's been in the league the longest, but that doesn't mean he's going to be the guy.
I like the guy. Drayon? I like
Dante
that kid.
Dion.
What he sees in camp or what he does, but I like him as far as pushing Blake for that fourth. As far as I think his name's Drayon.
Dante Dion. But Bash, the problem here is he's not an outside corner. He's strictly a slot corner.
And I think Michael Hunter might be ahead of him on the pecking order right now. Michael Hunter was with the ones yesterday on some plays.
Because Hunter can play outside.
That's correct.
Dion has physical limitations. He's a smurf.
Yeah, he's 5'8". I'm not sure what he's listed at, but he's probably like, 5'9".
He's a smurf. He's only going to be
a
slot
position
guy.
As far as Apple's out and DRC's on the outside, and he can toss Dion in that slot position, and he'll be okay as far as that number three if one is DRC or Eli is injured, and he can toss somebody in the slot. He'll be a good.
I think Dion can play the slot in this league.
I don't think he's proven it yet, though.
It's a projection.
He had a lot of issues last year.
It's a projection.
Yeah, in exhibition games and in the camp, people were taking advantage of his side in those game situations. Yeah,
especially was outside. Yeah, not so much inside. Outside.
Okay, so last year DRC did play a lot in the slot last year, and he did do good and proficient in it. And the slot.
Yes, that's not a problem.
I remember being on the outside a lot with Eli, so
Bash,
he doesn't have a problem.
Relax,
in the slot.
It's okay. It's not a problem. Those top three guys are good.
Got it.
All right.
Thanks, Bash.
Take
appreciate
care.
The call, buddy. 201-939-4513. Abdul in Minneapolis. He's up next. Hi, Abdul.
Hey, guys. What's up?
Hi, Abdul.
Hi.
So, did you guys happen to hear Mike Francesa and Kim Jones yesterday?
I heard it was a very good back and forth. I did not happen to hear it myself.
Did not hear it.
Well, basically, you know, Kim Jones is saying, you know, it's all good. No one, you know, him not being there during OTAs wasn't a big deal. No one's angry. Eli's good. The GM's good. And Francesa was like, you guys, this is just an example of, you know, enabling OBJ. You guys are, you know, Kim, you are in the line of an OBJ apologist, enabler. And this went off on her, you know. And I was like, wow, Mike, this is kind of, you know, everyone's okay with it besides you. And he was like, you know, an old school coach would have punished him. He should be punished. You know, it's an example of him not growing up. And I'm like,
Abdul, here's the thing. I understand if you're a fan and you say, oh, I'd rather have him be here and you're a little upset that he's not here, that's fine.
Right.
But where you have to draw the line is that you can't punish him. It's
right.
Not mandatory. It's optional. By definition, you cannot be punished if it's an optional workout, nor should he be punished since it's an optional workout.
Said, back in the day, even though it wasn't mandatory, it was mandatory. And an old school coach would have found a way to punish him.
OTAs have only existed for, what, the last 10 years or so?
Yeah, exactly.
So,
yeah,
I mean.
I'm not sure what he was talking about.
Now, Abdul, to
there,
me.
There were, well, let me clarify.
Yeah, go ahead, Paul. I'm sorry.
There were off-season spring workouts.
But they weren't called OTAs.
They were not called OTAs, but there were voluntary off-season strength and conditioning programs and spring workouts. There were even passing camps for a couple of years there that were called passing camps. They were 7-on-7s. And guys were not required to be there, and it was wink-wink. We'd like you to be there, but if they weren't, and many guys were not, nothing was done.
Now, and Abdul, here's how I look at this. I get, and I'm not saying this how I feel, but I understand at least the perspective from people that take his absence from OTAs as almost like a continuation of a trend, and it's a build upon the other stuff that's happened before, and that's what gets them upset. I understand where those people are coming from. But what I don't understand are the people that think this actually has a material effect on how good of a player he's going to be. That
right.
I don't see. I don't think we're ever going to be sitting here, even in August during training camp, saying, boy, you know, this team would be a lot better off if he was at those OTA practices, and he's really behind. I don't see that being an issue in any significant fashion between now and the end of the 2017 season.
I'm gonna go out on a limb here, and I'm gonna step on my soapbox just a little bit.
Oh boy!
And you can smack me if you want to, John.
Oh really?
Here's the problem. In my mind, think about all the guys around the NFL who did not report to voluntary OTAs, and the guys who did not report and just went about their business and did not, and I repeat, did not put anything on social media, stayed off Twitter, stayed off Instagram, stayed off Snapchat, did not go to sporting events and get themselves shot on television, those guys didn't catch any flack from the generic media at all.
Well, and also remember, no one else is as big. This guy might be the biggest individual star in the league. It's just part of the deal.
Olivier Vernon's a very big star too, and he didn't catch any flack.
Paul, I could ask 100 random people on the street how many people know who Olivier Vernon is.
I got you. He transcends football.
That's my point.
I get that.
That's my point.
But here's what I will say. If you asked me as a person, not as an NFL reporter and not as somebody who was involved with what we do, I would simply say to you, his biggest mistake was posting stuff on the internet.
Right.
Had he gone to California, worked out, and then come back here opening day of minicamp, there would not have nearly been a firestorm. But because there were pictures of him and Johnny Manziel, because there were pictures and photographs and videos of him at basketball games, people freaked out. That to me, person to person, forget football, person to person, that was his biggest mistake, is that he allowed himself to be out there on the social media platform while he was away doing his business. Had he been silent from the social media platform, had he not been photographed at Cavaliers games, had he not been photographed at the NCAA tournament, had that not happened, it would not have been but a spark on the radar, my opinion.
Hey, in his defense, a lot of those posts were secondhand posts. Like, he didn't post the picture. Someone else posted a picture of him and Manziel together. It wasn't his Twitter.
Well, I'm sure he knew that they were taking the picture and it was going to get posted.
Bad. Optics were very bad. And that's, you know, perception is.
There you go.
Part of the problem.
The magic word. And the perception. The perception was volatile or was inflammatory. The reality was not. And I've been telling everybody on BBK for months that was the case, and everybody wanted to buy the perception because the newspapers wanted you to.
Right. Which leads me into my second point.
Am I done?
It seems like that players are asked to go above and beyond. Like right now, everyone knows that he's outplayed his contract. You know, $1.8 million is a lot of money for us. But when it comes to NFL and the way he's played, he's gone above and beyond. He's outplayed his contract, but he's still asked to go above and beyond to be a team player, right? When are NFL teams? But the NFL teams do the minimum when it comes to these guys. They pay them the minimum. They do as little as possible.
Oh, Abdul, timeout. Abdul, timeout. The players of the NFL signed the collective bargaining agreement that set up this salary structure for rookies. They agreed to it. So I'm not playing a violin for these guys when they agreed to the salary structure. That's the deal. They had an old system where rookies made a ton of money. Guess what? That system doesn't exist anymore. They voluntarily changed it. So I'm not going to go there with you.
Well, he can say that, but then it's a double – hold on. Abdul, it's a double-edged sword. It's that very CBA that John's talking about that restricts how much money they can earn in the first 4 years of their deal. It's the same CBA, though, okay? The same CBA that says the workouts are voluntary.
Absolutely correct.
If
That's
you are going to demand the players be here, make the damn thing mandatory. It's that simple.
That's my point. The players are torn to the mud by not showing up voluntary, but the teams aren't caught up by paying them less money. You know, I personally, it's a non-issue, but when I heard Francesa go in on him about his, it was almost a personal attack, which I thought was kind of, he kind of went above and beyond just, I don't know, the X's and O's. He kind of said that this guy has a problem. He's a bet. And it seems like he's loved, you know, he's not a bad guy. And he's like, he's missed breakfasts and all this kind of stuff. And I was like, I'm not sure if he blew him off, if he blew, an interview off on franchise or what, whatever, but it kind of turned into a personal attack. And it was kind of weird. And I'm like,
Well, Abdul, I can tell you what that goes back to. He had a paid appearance with a lot of other Giants players at a fan event. Every Giant player showed up but him. That's what that goes back to.
Abdul, thanks, man. I will tell you. We
appreciate the call, man.
We can debate the bigger picture and the scope of the Odell situation as compared to how it applies to other players in the CBA. That's certainly a debate and a conversation we could always have. But, you know, whatever personal or not personal things Mike may have had against the player,
involved.
That's not us.
Nope.
That's
nothing
not what we're here for.
Us. Correct. We're here to talk football.
I mean, I'll tell you that I believe the CBA is ridiculous. I'll come flat out and tell you that. I just do. But that's not, you know, that's not what you were getting at, so we're not going to go there.
Yeah. I mean, look, exactly. I'm not going there. Not going there. 201-939-4513.
Oh, my, cherry pie.
On the soapbox, Paul Dottino. I've been saving that one up for a while.
Have you really?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's go to Nick in the Meadowlands. He's up next. How are you, Nick?
What's up, guys?
I love you, Paul. How are you, buddy?
All right. from Monday, John,
a couple
of things you're saying, like imagine social media, you know, back then. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
the
absolutely.
The best defensive player of all time would have been in a lot of trouble then, huh?
Well, you know what, though? Paul would actually be a better person to answer this question than I would. Paul, if social media existed in the 80s, do you think LT would have partaken
imagine
in that?
Imagine the pictures that would have been taken.
Lawrence would not have bothered with social media whatsoever. But what would
smart.
But what would have happened is all of those other people around him who were involved in bad situations and predicaments would have
and they don't care.
Would have run to social media
and
it would have been bad. Okay?
Oh, yeah.
We're not talking out of school. Lawrence has written books about all the stuff he was involved in away from the field. Right. This is not a revelation by any stretch of the imagination. But
I don't see him as a self-promoter, though.
No.
You know what I mean? I don't.
No.
I don't.
He wouldn't have had – look, even to this day, he has a marketing guy who has a Lawrence Taylor Twitter, the official Lawrence Taylor Twitter. His marketing guy does that, and it's about personal appearances. It's not about what Lawrence does with his life.
Hey, Paul, I got a question for you. Out of all those Giants players from the 86 Super Bowl team and the 90 Super Bowl team,
yeah.
If social media existed, who do you think would have been the guy that would have been, like, the most active on social media?
Wow.
Carl Banks.
Yes.
You think Carl would have done it?
He does it now.
I don't know, but I don't know if he would have done it as a player.
I think
if
he would have
had it back then. I think Carl Banks.
Because Carl,
you,
Carl is very
intelligent guy. You know, he has an opinion about things. You know,
Carl's a very, very intelligent guy. He uses it to his advantage. He uses it to show his wit and his humor many times.
How about McConkey?
I don't think he would have bothered with it either.
Okay.
No, I think Banks is actually the best answer for that. I really do.
What do you think Harry Carson's Twitter handle would have been? The Lone Captain?
Well, he's Captain Emeritus right now.
Yeah, exactly.
Captain,
I didn't realize that's what it was.
And that's what he
and
is.
And the other thing you were saying was, John, about Odell. And just imagine now with Evan Engram and all these guys opening up the field, that little slant across the middle, I can just see him doing that twice against Dallas on September 10th.
Well, look.
I mean,
nobody's
better at it. I mean, it's like in stride, bang, Eli puts the ball there. And, I mean, three guys are around him, and then you see three guys behind him.
You can argue who the best wide
gear.
Yeah, Nick, you can argue who the best wide receiver in the league is. In my opinion, best run after catch guy in the league is Beckham. I would put him
and
Antonio Brown to the top, but I put
Odell first.
Doctors even
said this. He has hips like bearings, the fastest hip rotation ever.
Yeah.
You've
he's
ever
quick.
Seen.
Yeah, he's got quick.
You said that, didn't you, Paul?
Yeah.
That was you that said
no,
that.
No, I know, see? Because
I've been listening to you for a long time.
I appreciate that. That's because I've been doing this for a long time.
That's why I talk to some people, you know, out in the field, you know what I mean, like out in work and stuff like that. It's like with DRC. I got one friend. Oh, he never plays. I said they moved him to slot, buddy. He's playing in the slot. What corner that played outside his whole career do you know that moved into the slot and did a job like that? You know? And I said, do you remember that? Played the slot the whole season.
That's an interesting point, John. He may be the first guy to get any type of all NFL accolades after being outside his whole career and then moving inside. I don't know if I've ever seen that.
Well, remember, though, they did add that position on the all-NFL teams this year.
Well, they had to because it's become so popular.
Right. Well, that's because that's because the nickel package on defense is played more than the base package.
I mean, I'm thinking back years ago, guys like Ron Woodson and Ronnie Lott played corner and played safety and were all pros at both.
You know what? The other guy who might have done it is Darren Woodson played slot a lot for the Cowboys. I don't know if he made all NFL. He definitely made Pro Bowl playing safety and slot corner. Now, he wasn't a full-time slot corner.
Right.
He played safety, and then in the sub, he played slot corner. That's one guy. I don't know if he was ever an all-pro doing that. He might have just been a Pro Bowler. But that's the only other recent guy that I could think of.
Charles Woodson.
But he went from corner to safety.
Corner to safety, but I don't think he played any slot.
I don't think so either.
It's a really hard one.
He was in the slot when Brandon Jacobs ran him over.
He was in that particular instance.
Yeah.
I guess, though, full-time, though.
As Charles Woodson, I mean, even almost as long. I hope the best for him because I have a DRC jersey. I wore 41 like I've told you guys before, and I love DRC, man, because – how many interceptions does he have? He's up near 30 already.
Career, I'm not sure. I will tell you this. I enjoy watching him play, and you can't say that a lot about defensive backs.
No.
Usually you say that about offensive skill position guys. You very rarely say, I have fun watching a defensive member of the secondary play. I have fun watching DRC.
Except for guys you just mentioned, you know.
It's a small group.
Charles, you know.
Deion Sanders was a fun guy to watch, but he was strictly a corner. But he was a fun guy to watch.
He didn't play slot.
Oh, yeah. And so, about in mini camp yesterday, you know, seeing Odell there, I mean, and everybody else, I'm happy. You know, he looks good. He looks happy. He looks different a little bit, you know. And the biggest thing nobody talks about, how about McAdoo's hairdo?
I'm telling you, everyone keeps mentioning.
He looks high and tight, sharp, slicked back hair. I mean,
see, everyone keeps bringing up.
He looks like he means business.
Yeah, see, Nick, here's the thing. Everyone keeps bringing up Pat Riley for him. If you go to Google and
Pat Riley's got the slicked back freaking 80s look. This is high and tight. Looks like he's a general.
Nick, here's what you do. You go online. You Google search Paul Dottino.
Oh, God.
If you find, like, a picture of Paul from, like, the early 90s, the hair is almost identical to what Ben McAdoo had yesterday at practice. Just go and
Paul's
do it.
Paul's a, you know, a goomba, you know? They got that hair, you know what I mean?
Put it
this way. Back in the 80s, I would picture that with Paul. I got to go look at it now, but definitely, you know what I mean? I could picture that, what I mean?
If the traveling production company of A Bronx Tale needs an extra McAdoo can audition.
That's a good one.
Okay?
That's a good one.
Remember, the best line in that movie. What's the best line in that movie, Paul?
Oh, there are about 50,000 great lines in that movie.
What is the best line that you – I mean, you know, bleep, bleep, bleep. You can't say that, right?
No, you can't.
There are a bunch of those, so let's just leave that out.
The best line in that movie, locks the door, now you just can't leave.
Yeah, that's a great one. I love it. I love that one.
Now you can't leave.
I love it. I love it.
Sends chills.
Oh, that's great movie.
Thank you, Nick.
Everybody looks good, man. You know, everybody looks good watching, you know. And going back with Odell, listen to what Eli said. Here. Anybody that didn't watch the interview with Eli, watch the interview. And what does he say? Did it matter that he didn't come last week? And he said, not really.
Exactly.
He didn't miss anything.
Exactly.
A couple plays we add in, you know.
He'll be fine.
He'll be fine. Look, like John knows, I said the other day, I was at that Atlanta game a few years back, and he missed all of this stuff, and look at what he did.
Absolutely. Thank you, Nick. We got to run, pal.
Take care.
How many career interceptions do you think Dominic Rodgers-Cromartie has?
I'm going to guess he's got about...
He's been in the league since 2008.
2000.
So, nine seasons.
I wouldn't be surprised if he's got like 45.
30.
It is only 30.
Here's his totals. 4, 6, 3. He didn't have any for the Eagles in 2011. 3-12, 3-13. 2-14, 3-15, and then 6 last year.
I get a better one, and you can cheat by looking. How many times has he played 16 games in a season?
I haven't looked at that yet. Let me take a guess. Just thinking, I'm going to say 3.
Yeah, I don't think it's probably half his career.
Oh, you know what?
I would say I was going to say it's no more than 5.
He played 5.
5,
and the 3 of those were his first 3 years in the league.
Yeah, Yeah.
That's a good one.
He's had a little trouble at times staying on the field, and that, of course, hurts the numbers.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
We good? We got one more live phone call?
No, that's it.
Okay. Stick around, folks.
Yeah, absolutely. Paul and I will kind of give you our recap of minicamp practice number one, and we'll do our number two as well. Talk about number two and what was said during media avails yesterday and all that good stuff. Before we say goodbye, Paul, I want to touch on one other thing with you really, really, really quick.
Yeah, what you got?
Do you think the coverage of that 86 and 90 Giant teams would have been different in the social media age? And if so, how?
Well, it has to be, because this is a whole different animal than what it was back then. So it certainly would have been. How? Well, for example, Lawrence Taylor probably would have been in a whole lot of trouble, more so than he was then. And since he was the best defensive player in the league for all those years, how would it have changed the Giants if he wasn't available to play?
And how do you think Parcells would have dealt with that different type of age?
Oh, that's another. We could write a book about that.
I think he would have had a freaking ball with it.
I think he would have joked all the time about
that's
it.
That's what I mean. He would have been, like, bringing up reporters' tweets to them and stuff. He would have been messing with
he
people
would
all
have
the time.
Absolutely. Out in public, yes.
Yeah.
In the press room, yes. Behind closed
doors.
Oh, he
would hate it.
He would have been a volcanic eruption. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Trust me on that one. He would have been a volcanic eruption. He hated. Look, he called us communist subversives. The media was tabbed communist subversives by Bill Parcells because he was that much against what newspaper print could do to erode the fabric of his football team. How do you think he would feel about Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat?
Especially those jerks that worked over at the Record in New Jersey. Those guys were the worst.
I don't know where that came from.
The worst.
Let's get out of here. We got practice to go to.
We do. Thanks for joining us, everybody. Me and Paul on Breakdown Practice Number One. And talk about what we're going to preview for number two. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow on Giants.com. At special time, 1 o'clock.
1 o'clock tomorrow.
See you then. Bye. And we'll take you the rest of the way. John Schmelk, Paul Dottino, and Paul, day one of minicamp, very eventful, but more importantly, very hot. It was a nice preview for what August is going to be like for training camp. It was 90, it was steamy, and the players are sweating.
Heat index was like 96, John, and, you know, we had a number of days at FDU Madison many years ago, and also in Albany at times.
Oh, it could get steamy up there.
Where
oh, yeah.
The humidity and the thickness of the air just turned it into a real sauna. They were talking about a heat index of about 96 during the course of practice yesterday, and you could certainly feel it. Every once in a while, a cloud might come by, a little bit of a breeze, kind of helped a little bit, but it was nasty.
I thought it was very funny. During one of the TV timeouts, which is basically a designated rest and hydration period, there was literally one patch of shade on the field from the lift, I swear to you, made by the lift of the video guys to film practice.
Yeah.
There was basically a defensive huddle
yes.
in that shadow for about three
yes.
or 4 minutes during the TV timeout. So the players were dealing with it, but a couple things that I was surprised by. What does Eric Flowers think he is? Long pants, red sweatshirt under the jersey. Has he lost his damn mind?
You know, this is a guy who is the new Eric Flowers. His conditioning has been terrific during this offseason, and it's quite clear he's looking to prove a point. I mean, you know,
yeah, but,
guys.
But didn't we question his conditioning? I don't think people cared about his conditioning.
Yeah, but I think what he's trying to show everybody is that he's got a new mindset and a new discipline about himself.
To put himself at risk by wearing a sweatshirt in 95-degree weather.
I will say this. I will say this. Sweatshirt or not, that stomach is a lot flatter than it used to be.
And Bobby Hart had the hood up for a little bit of practice, too.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did, the two offensive linemen. But I will say this. I did not see any players take it off the field during the workout. And, you know,
no, I did that, not
and
see
that's
it
a big deal.
Off the field, no.
Because there are times during these kinds of summer workouts, and this was really a summer-like workout, let's not kid ourselves, where guys have to go inside because they have fainting symptoms or they have dizziness symptoms, and basically they got to go in and get an IV in the trainer's room because they have dehydration problems. I did not see a single solitary Giant have to be taken off the field.
I didn't notice it either, and that's obviously a good sign.
It's a very good sign.
Now, we'll get to the stuff that was spoken about in media avails. in a second. We're talking about practice. Let's finish that conversation first, Paul. Obviously, Olivier Vernon, Odell Beckham Jr., both in the house. It's mandatory. They're here, and they were both on the practice field, though. Both seem to be limited in some way, shape, or form. They haven't been here. Obviously, no reason to put them at risk the first day of mandatory minicamp.
Right. You know, it was quite clear that Coach McAdoo was going to rotate the snaps amongst everybody, first team, second team, third team. They were all going to get their shares.
And I should point out, not technically limited in terms of practice designation because they weren't hurt, but they had, let me put it this way. Beckham had fewer snaps than, say, a Brandon Marshall
yes.
or Tavares
limited
Kang
in terms
Sterling
of reps.
Shepherd. Correct, yes.
And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, the guys who have been here during the voluntary workouts, you want to reward them. You know, there's nothing wrong with rewarding guys who have put in a little bit of extra time at the facility by saying, okay, you guys get some more snaps, you guys get some more reps, maybe you guys get some with the first team that you might not have gotten otherwise. There's nothing wrong with that.
No. And Sterling Shepard, I thought, had an excellent practice.
He did.
Some nice separation on Dominic Rogers-Cromartie, which is not easy to do.
No.
A couple of nice catches over the middle, so I thought he had a good practice.
Matt Lacoste, again, another good practice, no, John.
He's got to be careful. And Mark Herzlick poking that ball out from behind and causing the fumble.
That is true. But Mark, Matt, I should say, he is showing flypaper hands. I mean, he's catching everything that's coming his way. And, you know, again, Matt, you got to stay healthy because right now that's the biggest drawback during what you've shown in your first 2 years with the Giants.
And the one thing Eli Manning did say about him when he spoke to the media after practice is that he knows what he's doing and he knows where to be, which is very important.
He's a very smart player.
Right.
He's a very versatile player. And, you know, he's a very eager player. Again, just got to be able to stay on the field. I thought the other thing that was interesting to me too, John, was that, you know, when we were watching some of the different positions, whether it was Okwara who was up on the defensive end spot for a little while because, again, Vernon didn't have as many reps, or we saw Adams playing the starting safety spot next to Collins because Darian Thompson was sick.
You know who else was out there too? Nat Burhey got some run with the first unit too.
Burhey did get some run, no question about that. You know, so we saw a couple of different combos with some guys.
And Eli Apple was out with
illness
as well, so Michael Hunter was actually in the mix at cornerback.
Exactly. So I wanted to kind of just throw a little something out of these folks because it was good for them to get not only additional reps, but higher reps with higher-level teammates in terms of the depth chart. I thought that was good. Odighizuwa, personal reasons excused. Those are the guys who were not available and were not here on campus. But again, a situation where everything was running smoothly at the practice.
And, of course, JT Thomas still on the side, Justin Pugh still on the side, and Red Ellison still on the side as well.
And Snead also was doing some stuff on the side
Correct.
As well.
So I thought Hunter actually made a really nice play. He stayed with Brandon Marshall one
yeah.
shallow crossing route. Marshall caught the ball, but he would have been tackled before the first down. I thought he made a nice play. Another guy, Paul, that keeps jumping out to me at these practices, I think the Giants have something in Devin Taylor. If he doesn't make this team, I'm going to be surprised. He has given those undrafted rookie tackles a real, real run for their money when the second units are out there. I think Taylor was the one that got his hand on the ball at the line of scrimmage and deflected Eli Manning.
I thought it was,
practice.
Too.
Not positive. I looked at the video, but I think it was him.
Far away. It was hard to see.
And he also got what would have been a sack or two getting
two?
Into the backfield.
I counted two.
And frankly, Paul, that's kind of what he's been doing in the OTAs too. So I think that was a nice find by the pro personnel department. He started games with the Lions last year, and I think he's going to make a real run for this team. So once you get past, you know, I think Okwara, I think his roster spot is safe based on how he played in the last year.
Right.
But once you get past him, the defensive ends have some competition there.
I agree, and I think it's interesting how Coach McAdoo specifically talked about the versatility on how they're looking to plug some guys in different spots. Now, Taylor played some inside and outside,
did,
which
yes.
we expected he would.
And he's 6'7". Remember, he's a long, lanky guy.
Absolutely. So that was a good thing to see. Obviously, we know about Herzlick playing some tight end and some linebacker. We also saw Darius Powell playing some tight end. He was working with the tight ends today.
And you know what? It's funny. That doesn't surprise me. Because there were times at practice last year, initially, when I look up, I see Powell make a catch, and I'm like, who the heck, the tight end, Brady 6? And he's a receiver. He's just
well, he's
a very,
big.
He is. And that's why I think it actually makes sense for him to work there as a receiving threat at tight end.
Yeah, he's a little bit of a thicker Ramses Barden, if you will, if you
yeah.
want to picture his frame. Okay? Now, the thing about it is, you know, where's he fit? Who knows?
Right.
But Coach McAdoo just wanted to make a point. He said, you know, we have a period on in our practice today, And I guess I'm interested in seeing this going forward, John, if he does it during training camp. He called it something, and I can't remember the name he called it.
Position flex.
Yes. There you go.
Is that what it was called?
I think it was.
I think it was position flex.
And he said, in that period, we want to see these guys do as many different things as they can because that adds to their value. So I thought that was cool. And then the other thing that I thought, and I'm look, guys, you know me. I love DJ Fluker. You watch him out there, and you could see he's hoping for the day when he can contact people.
Oh.
He's just – he's a big man, and he just – he's like every snap, you could see it. It's like – I want to contact people, but I know I can't, so I'm not going to do it.
A couple other notes from practice for me. I saw Jarrell Adams have a nice blitz pickup up the middle on a blitz, and that freed up and gave Eli the time to find Sterling Shepard, who beat Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie for a touchdown in the no-huddle portion of practice. I thought that was a really, really nice play. Avery Moss got his hand on a ball and then knocked it down.
Yep.
Jadder Johnson, he deflected a ball up in the air that got picked off by Pinkins. At one point during practice.
I remember seeing that one.
That was a nice play.
Pinkins with a pick.
Pinkins with a pick. So, you know, I really thought that, you know, those were some of the guys to me that jumped out. And Davis Webb during the opportunity portion of practice, in the practice where they kind of give the young guys a chance to play 7-on-7, he completed his first 5 passes of that session before having 2 incompletions. 3 of those went to Travis Rudolph, 1 to Evan Engram, 1 to Wayne Gallman for a touchdown on a little wheel route. So,
let me just say something about Davis Webb. And, you know, We had the chance to talk to Jim Zorn a couple weeks ago on the show, who was his tutor during the offseason prior to the draft. He is a very calm individual, much like Eli, okay, as we've talked about. I can't tell you his study habits because I'm not in the film room with him, but we're told he has great study habits. But what I really like about him is that, you know, Jim Zorn said one of the things he's got to do and he's got to learn how to do as a rookie, he's got to learn to make other people in the huddle believe that he belongs, that he's confident, that he can be in control, and that they will believe in him and follow him. He needs to assert his assertiveness, if you will.
Assert his assertiveness.
Okay? And Zorn said that's a really big deal for a rookie quarterback when he first gets onto campus, especially for a guy who's going to be dealing with a little bit of a new system. You know, he's dropping back now where he's not just doing the shotgun stuff. He said, you know, he's going to be unsure of himself in some ways, but he's got to make people believe simple things like when he calls out a play in the huddle, he's got to make them believe that he's the leader. And I have to tell you, now, we're not in huddle, John. Neither one of us are.
Thank goodness, by the way.
But, yeah. But here's the thing. You watch the way Davis Webb carries himself.
No, he has a very good demeanor.
He really does. That's he's true. Calm. He's smooth. He's confident.
He has a stature, too. You know, he just kind of has that stature. Well, he's a big guy.
Physically, a little bit less width, I guess. Kind of like Kerry Collins.
Okay.
Or maybe Kent Graham, if you will, which goes back quite a ways.
Stop scaring Giant fans.
But my point is, here's this guy, 6'5", who is smooth, who walks around like, okay, you know what? I'm here with the Giants, and I belong here, and this is really cool. And he doesn't seem like a deer in headlights. And I just want to bring that point up, because we've now seen him for a little while now.
So let's see him in a preseason game.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. But it's a good sign
for
a quarterback to exude that kind of certainty and assertiveness.
And he doesn't look lost in practice.
Not at all.
He doesn't look lost in
practice. Not at all. And he throws a nice ball.
Oh, ball comes out real easy. One other note, I mentioned Gallman's touchdown catch. I thought he announced a nice run where there was no room inside. He bounced it outside around right tackle, showed that little jump cut. Now for the media availabilities, it took Odell Beckham a while, but eventually he got around to making the statement that the holdout from voluntary OTA has had nothing to do with his contract. I don't understand why he asked for the 6th time to be asked the same question to give that answer, but he eventually did give that answer, I think, on the next to last question of the press conference, I thought was the most significant thing we got out of the whole thing.
Yeah, the absence of him at voluntary OTAs was very simple. He said he needed to train and to learn things about life and to mature, and that he thought it was well worth it. He said he learned a lot of things from Chris Carter, the Hall of Fame wide receiver, a lot of idiosyncrasies
about the
game.
With for a day or two, so right. I don't want to go nuts about that.
Well, I'm sure they talked a lot, even if he wasn't on campus with him out in California. So I thought that was interesting. He did say that he constantly texted with the Giants people, and in fact said did a lot of had a lot of contact with Brandon Marshall. He said, and just seem real happy and excited about being here. And, you know, and I will add, for those of you who remember John Mara's quote, I guess it was a week or so ago in the town hall, when he said, I hope that Odell Beckham is a lifetime Giant or a Giant for life. When asked that very question, Odell said, hey, I'm on the same page. I agree with him. I hope I am a Giant for life, which was really cool, too.
Absolutely. Of course, easier to say than to actually do it. We'll see what happens as we move forward year after year. But remember, the Giants do control his rights for 2 more years on their contract, and then they can always franchise him, too. So this is nothing imminent, folks, so don't lose your mind about it. Olivier Vernon spoke to the media as well, and basically he said, look, guys, even when I was at the Dolphins, I trained on my own in Miami. So he basically said that's the way he gets ready for football, and that's what he's going to continue to do.
Funniest part about that, Vernon said, you know, I never thought I'd leave. He thought he was going to be a Dolphin for his whole career. So he said the fact that I trained on my own in Miami wasn't a big deal because I played in Miami. So he said, like, this is totally different for me because now I'm playing with a team, a different team that's not Miami. But if it ain't broke, don't fix it. I train there. I work well there. I know what I'm doing there. That's where I'm going to do it. And so he also said he had communicated with Coach McAdoo. So everybody's on the same page here.
Final thing before you say goodbye, Paul, and a lot of people, you know, Ben McAdoo, if you guys haven't seen on the website, got a new haircut, different look. Some people said he's trying to mimic Pat Riley. I think he's trying to mimic Paul Dottino.
Oh, no.
That is, you know, Dave, could you see that kind of being like the Dottino kind of, you know, the straight back if – no offense if you've had a little bit better coverage.
Well, I used to.
I think he was going for the Dottino. That's what I'm going to go with. McAdoo's look going for the Dottino.
I wasn't buying it. I wasn't buying it. And you know what? It just – Eli Manning said he's the head coach. Of course it looked great. Of course it was wonderful. We wouldn't make fun of him. Okay, Eli, let me make fun of him for you.
Oh, okay. I wasn't going to go there, but please go ahead.
Coach, it's not you. It's just not you, Coach.
Write your own pink slip, Paul. Have fun.
Go back to the way it was, because that was Coach McAdoo. That's the one that coached an 11-win team that went to the playoffs. I'm just saying.
So you're really concerned that the hairdo might have an adverse impact on the season here?
It's all about the karma. It's all about the karma, John. We'll see how it works out during the course of the rest of the minicamp.
Thank you, Paul.
You got it, John.
All right. Make sure you stay tuned to Giants.com for day two and day three of minicamp. Practice is going on right now, so make sure you check it out for all the coverage. Tomorrow will be on at 1 o'clock on Giants.com. That'll be Paul Dottino and Jeff Fiegels, and me and Jeff will be back with you at noon on Friday. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time, everybody. Have a great day.